Hare Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was known as the Simha, or Lion Guru. On occasion, when he saw someone he knew to be a proponent of impersonalism, he would call that person over and challenge, "Why are you cheating the people with Mayavadi philosophy?" He would often tell his disciples not to compromise. "Why should you go flatter?" he would say. "You should speak the plain truth without any flattery. Money will come anyway." Understand flattery? No. Flattery means when you praise someone with the idea you're going to get something for it. Right? You know? Does that make sense? You know, telling the kid next to you he's so nice and great and then trying to get his gulab jamun. You understand? That's flattery. Okay? So he's saying you just preach, you just speak the truth, and then Krishna will send money. Like that. It's up to Krishna when, how, like that. Whenever Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wrote or spoke the Vaishnava philosophy, he was uncompromising. The conclusion was according to the Shastra, and the logic strong. But sometimes Abhay would hear his spiritual master express the eternal teachings in a unique way that Abhay knew he would never forget. "Don't try to see God," Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would say, "but act in such a way that God sees you." In other words, we're trying to see God, we're doing everything, and you know that we should see Him. But the point is the affection is that you're trying to please Him. And then if He's pleased, naturally He'll try to see you, right? Now, try to see God will be difficult. But if God wants to see you, what's to stop Him? Anything? No? So that's the idea. If you act in such a way that He's pleased, then automatically, then everything will start to work. Yes? No. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta contemned temple proprietors who made a business of showing the deity for a living. To be a sweeper in the street was more honorable, he said. He coined a Bengali phrase, Shaligram Dwara Badam Banga. The priests are taking the Shaligram Shila as a stone for cracking nuts. It means they're sitting in there and they have to crack some nuts. So they take the shaligram and whack it like that. So he's making the point is that one should be straightforward. So it's better that you're not using the deity. It means people who have a temple and the whole point of the temple is to make money so that they can live. That's not very good. Better than you're just sweeping, someone who sweeps the street for his living. Does that make sense? In other words, if a person shows the Shaligram form of the Lord, or any form of the deity, simply with a view to make money, then he is seeing the deity not as the Lord, but as a stone, a means for earning his livelihood. Abhay had the opportunity to see his spiritual master deal with the nationalist Subhas Chandra Bose, who had been Abhay's schoolmate at Scottish Churches College. Bose had come in a somewhat critical mood, concerned about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's recruiting young men into religious life. Srila Prabhupada, right? Because they're trying to do this nationalist movement to free India, so they want the young men to, you know, be fighting for that. But then he's seeing that young men are joining Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And so he's worried that, you know, if this grows, then there'll be no one left to, you know, for nationalism. Of course, if there's no one left, who cares for nationalism? But it's a common thing that one or two people are doing something. Well, what if the whole world does that? The whole world will never do that. So one never has to worry about that argument.
Yes.
Is it offense if he didn't know the rock was actually a Shaligram? From that point of view, there would be, some reaction would be there, but it wouldn't be the same as if you know. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if somebody knows and pushes you over, then that's more of a problem. If someone doesn't know and by accident bumps into you and pushes you over, it's still going to be a reaction, but it's not going to be as strong, right? And the same, from the other point is, you know, you might find, but generally you wouldn't find Shaligram sitting around in the backyard or something like that. And, you know what I'm saying? Might be. You never know. But so. Huh? Yes? Makes sense? Oh, you have Shaligrams in your backyard or something? No? Okay. Yours? No. Yours? You don't have any backyard, so therefore there can't be any Shaligrams in it, so you don't have to worry. You don't have a Shaligram Srila in your backyard. You have a backyard. You're not sure. Yes, behind the building, the open area behind the building is called the backyard. The open area in front is called the front yard. Right? And if they run around with funny hats on and catching criminals, they're called Scotland Yard. Okay? Okay, so you have all the different things like that. And if they're running around in an open area between buildings that has a big fence around it and walls and they can't get out because they're bad people, then they're called a yard bird. Yeah. Okay. And if it's a stick that measures 3 feet, then that's called a yard stick. Okay, so now you understand yard tattva. Very good. Any other questions on yard tattva? No?
Srila Prabhupada, Subhas Chandra Bose came to my Guru Maharaj and said, "So many people you have captured, they are doing nothing for nationalism." My Guru Maharaj replied, "Well, for your national propaganda, you require very strong men, but these people are very weak. You can see they are very skinny, so don't put your glance upon them. Let them eat something and chant Hare Krishna." In this way, he avoided him. Rather than arguing, he just said, yeah. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta used to say that when the day came that high court judges were devotees of Krishna with Vaishnav Tilak on their foreheads, then he would know that the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness was becoming successful. Right? You understand high court judge? Right? See, is that you have in a building, the courthouse, then on the ground floor, that's the lower court, right? And then the next floor up is higher, like that. And then as you go up, it gets higher and higher courts. Yeah? What do you think? Now, what would you call a court that's in the basement? Really low court, or? You understand? Or would he be he's talking about high court judges? And we've just said that you have a building, the courthouse, and on the ones on the ground floor are the lower court, and the ones on the higher floor are the higher court. So you're asking if that was correct.
What about the Supreme Court?
The Supreme Court, that would be the penthouse right on the top. Then you also have the element that a high court judge could be a court, you know, that's situated not lower but on a higher level, you know, physically like that, where they're playing tennis, and the person who's judging the game, that would be a high court judge. Yes? What do you think? So what are they talking about here, the high court judge? Who is? Different courts for judging criminals, okay?
One of them is a high court.
Okay, so what does it mean it's a high court?
It's a more respectable court.
It's a more respectable court, yeah.
Yeah, so
he wants high court judges to be devotees. Okay, high court judges. So the low court judges don't need to be devotees.
They also need to be devotees.
Okay.
High court.
Yeah. So in other words, you have a court system, so criminals come in at the lower court. Now, if there's a problem in the decision in that court, then you can go to a court higher than that, and then they may take up the case and judge it. And then, and then from there it goes up to the National High Court, then from there to the Supreme Court. Like, there's so many things that goes through levels. So you're saying when the High Court judges, because they're the most respectable, right? The High Court judges of all the judges are considered, you know, everybody respects them. So if those people are devotees, then you can understand that the mission is spreading nicely, because they're very intelligent, they're very well situated in the material world, they're very, very thoughtful, very sober. So if they're devotees wearing tilak when they're sitting in the court, then you know that you're well established. Yes? It says, Krishna Kanja was becoming successful. So then I guess it keeps going beyond that. But, you know, then you can tell it's really going on. Okay, so I guess continue. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, you know, things he was saying. He said that Jesus Christ was a Shaktivesh avatar, an empowered incarnation of God. How can it be otherwise, he said. He sacrificed everything for God. In his scholarly language, he declared, quote, the materialistic demiurge cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat. But sometimes in speech, he phrased it in a more down-to-earth way. Quote, the mundane scholars who are trying to understand the Supreme Lord by their senses and mental speculation are like a person trying to taste the honey in a bottle by licking the outside of the bottle. Right? Philosophy without religion, he said, is dry speculation. And religion without philosophy is sentiment and sometimes fanaticism. But, the materialistic demiurge cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat. Right? Anyone understand that?
Sounds like
Yeah. Yes? Fanaticism. Fanaticism means where the rule becomes more important than the purpose that the rule is trying to obtain. So being very enthusiastic or overly enthusiastic to see that the rule is established, then tired. Going to bed on time. You go to bed on time, then it's easy to get up. Go to bed late, hard to get up. Okay. Does that make sense? Their main focus is trying to establish the rule, as opposed to the purpose that the rule is for. Right? Does that make sense?
Maybe you could give an example.
An example. Fanatic. Let's say you're trying to keep all the stuff in the kitchen nice,
Okay? And so, you know, you have an order, how things go and everything like that. And so devotees in the afternoon would come in during the evening work, you know, put everything in place and all that. So that's nice. That's what you want to do. But then somebody is so absorbed in just everything being perfect that, you know, he's very, you know, gently rough with everybody, yelling and screaming and this and that. But he's forgetting that the reason it's all nice and all that is to please Krishna. He thinks that just that everything is nice, that's what's good. But the point is everything is nice because it'll please Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah? Trying to think of something with marbles, but it didn't work out. Okay, the materialistic demure. Materialistic means, you know, mundane, like that fruitive, or the jnanis. Then demure means kind of like their mood or their view on life, so therefore that's their attitude. Cannot possibly stretch, you know, means reach something. The transcendental autocrat, right? Transcendental means, you know, above the material, and autocrat means, you know, someone who's in charge, who it's like what he says, that's what's going to happen. There's no question of it not happening. So the transcendental autocrat is Krishna, right? So in other words, those with a materialistic mentality can't attain Krishna. Yeah, but here then it's even subtler that it's those who are very intelligent, the mental speculators. They cannot see the Lord, right? Because just using intelligence, you can't find Krishna. It has to be the combination with intelligently trying to express your devotion. Yeah. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that the whole world was simply a society of cheaters and cheated. He gave the example that loose women often visit certain holy places in India with the idea of seducing sadhus, thinking that to have a child by a sadhu is prestigious. And immoral men dress themselves as sadhus, hoping to be seduced by the cheating women. His conclusion, a person should aspire to leave the material world and go back to Godhead because, quote, this material world is not a fit place for a gentleman. And people are trying to say that there's something, the West has something more unique to offer that India doesn't, right? It's like everything goes on. Abhai saw that when disciples ask a spiritual master about something in the future, he never replied, yes, it is going to happen, or yes, we are going to do it. Rather, he would say, yes, if Krishna desires, it may be. Although in his younger years he had been an astrologer and able to predict the future, he had given it up. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was a lifetime brahmachari and was very strict about avoiding association with women. Once Abhai was sitting with his spiritual master when another disciple was present along with his young wife. The wife asked Srila Bhaktisiddhanta if she might speak with him privately, but he replied, no, whatever it is you can ask here. I cannot see you in private. Abhai was impressed by this, since Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was in his 60s and the girl could have been his granddaughter. Regardless, he would not speak with any woman alone. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta liked to make his disciples into sannyasis. But one day, one of his sannyasi disciples was forcibly dragged away by his wife. In tears, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta lamented that he was unable to save that soul, yet he did not speak despairingly of Krishna conscious family life. He said, I would have sex hundreds of times if I thought that I could raise Krishna conscious children. Yeah, I think it was as they were having an initiation ceremony, and the devotee was sitting down at the ceremony to take sannyas. And right in the middle of the ceremony, his wife stormed in, grabbed him, and dragged him out. So,
guess that's one way to do it. It'll be very obvious to everybody, but this is not going to work. But, so his main thing, he really liked to establish sannyasis and all that, and the mat, the brahmacharis and all. But he was very, you know, supportive of grihastha life, because then they're having children, they're raising them in Krishna consciousness and that. Though we can see from this is that he is saying that if I could raise Krishna conscious children, then I'd have children. So he's taking it that he doesn't feel capable to raise Krishna conscious children. Does that make sense? So that means it's a very serious thing, right? It's not just a matter of sentiment. So one should take it very seriously. So he's setting an example. He's not saying no one should have children. He's saying that one should take it very seriously. He would send his brahmacharis out to sell the Gaudiya Math magazine and books. And even if a brahmachari were able to sell only one or two, it would please him very much, and he would exclaim, "You are so nice." In considering whether essays were worthy for publication, he would count how many times the word Krishna or Chaitanya had been used. If these holy names had been quoted sufficiently, he would say, "That's all right, this can be used."
Yes.
I mean, reading our different publications, some articles in BTG or different websites, our websites. And you'll be lucky sometimes to find one name in the whole article.
Yes.
I was telling you I was reading an article on relationship the other day on our main website. Not one time.
Mention Krishna. You wanted to make a comment on that? So.
Yeah.
No? Yes, because it's a matter of that, as we see Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one of the things that we see constantly coming up that impressed Srila Prabhupada was everything he would take back to Krishna. Something in the future, then yes, if Krishna desires. If something now, yes. You know, anything that was connected to Krishna was important. If it wasn't connected to Krishna, it had no importance. The point is that the material creation can be important if it's recognized its connection to Krishna, right? Just like this. Let us say a man, he has his house. He's a very wealthy man, and inside his house are all kinds of nice things, right? So these things are all very valuable. But now let's say somebody steals these things, right? Let's use a different example. Let's say this man is, not in the house, or not visible in the house. And the servants in the house, then they're saying, they get together amongst themselves, and they say, "This is my house. See here, all my nice furniture, and all my nice pictures on the wall, and everything like this, like that." So, as their stuff, is it valuable? You understand? Does it actually have a value? Seems the question is formulating in the back. Even when she picks up her hand, you can hardly see it. It just gets above someone's hand. Does that make sense? But the point is it's not that it's not of value. It's not of value because it's not seen in relationship to the person who owns it. Right? Because if we see it otherwise, then we say, no, it has value. But then that's the value that's given to it by thieves. So this material world is Krishna's. The whole thing is his. So if you see value in the material world not connected to Krishna, that's the mentality of a thief. But if it's seen in connection to Krishna, then that's real. So the difficulty is people give value to this world outside of Krishna. Without Krishna, it's just illusion. So it's like, how much can you sit around and talk about how nice a mirage you're seeing in the desert? The nice coconut trees and the water, shimmering there, and all the nice water birds and all the different things that are there, creepers and plants, and nice coconuts on the tree, right? And, it's all looking very, very nice, right? Maybe if you're feeling tired, you can throw in a nice, condo or something, you know, something is there. But it has no meaning. So this idea to be very expert in the material world, that's what everybody in the material world is trying to do, except for lazy people who are not getting anywhere anyway. But the problem is people have always been endeavoring for material perfection. And they've always felt a shortcoming in the results they've gotten and the satisfaction and dealing, everything like that. So to then take it that Krishna consciousness will improve if we're more professional, what is professional and Krishna consciousness, how are these connected? It's not logical. If someone's a professional, let's say he's a doctor or a lawyer or a business executive, does that mean he's a devotee? No. And if you have someone as a devotee, does that mean he's a professional person? No. So where's the connection? It means the devotee could be, or the professional person could be a devotee. But so it's a maybe. It's not a fixed point. So to make the logic based on the principle that it's a fixed thing is not logical. It's a fallacy. So to think that if we're more bureaucratic, more professional, then we will be more Krishna conscious, or we'll be more appreciated by people. That doesn't necessarily, hold any weight. That's the difficulty. But due to illusion, people are thinking that's what it is. No, people are impressed by sincerity. Right? Like he's probably one of the more known people in the world is, religious, Francis of Assisi, right? There's a place in Italy called Assisi, right? And there was a monk there called Francis, right? Therefore, Francis of Assisi. And since Assisi didn't belong to Francis, therefore it's not called Assisi of Francis. But since he was from Assisi, it's called Francis of Assisi, right? Makes sense to everybody? Doesn't make sense. So what would you want to call it? The dude Francis that happened to grew up and lived, he was one of the locals in Assisi or something. No? Can't think how you'd work him in. Okay. So this Francis of Assisi, he just wanted to actually become absorbed in God consciousness and just become free from all the material designations and activities and just absorb himself in, you know, his prayer and everything like that. And so he found some old rundown church. He kind of fixed it up so it kind of worked. Some other people joined him. And, you know, eventually it kind of grew into something. But he's known not for his organizational ability, but because of his devotional sincerity. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, so many people in history, you can see that they're known just for their good, religious sentiment, that endeavor like this, not for organization. So organization is not necessarily, like the Catholic Church is very organized, but then a whole group of people didn't appreciate the organization, so then they split off and started their own organizations. Right? So organization's not enough. Does this make sense? So the difficulty comes is when one falls under the illusion, not that these aren't important things, to be very pukka and this and that, but to see that there would be such a thing as relationship, because the basis of our philosophy is sambandha gyan, and sambandha means relationship. And that consists of the living entity, God, and the material energy. When you understand each of their natures and the relationship with each other, then you actually have knowledge. If you don't know that, you're not actually considered knowledgeable. Right? So then to do an article on relationship that doesn't touch on Godhead, then it would seem that they missed the point. That would be like talking about recipes about sandwiches and you don't discuss bread, you know, or making sabjis, but you don't you talk about the spicing and this, but don't talk about the vegetables. Does that make sense? So it's like that, actually. So, you know, there's no excuse for it. It's just one of those things that seems to happen when people don't apply themselves very well to our philosophy. That's what he means here. It becomes sentiment. What was that? Philosophy without religion, he said, is dry speculation. And religion without philosophy is sentiment and sometimes fanaticism. So we see here, this would be a example of sentiment. The sentiment's nice that they want devotees to have good relationships, but without the philosophy, all you have is sentiment. You don't have the science of how they'll work, so they won't actually be able to create any lasting or permanent solution to relationship problems. Same time as philosophy without religion, so you accept the philosophy, but if you don't accept the culture of Krishna consciousness, then people will speculate about what's to be done or not. And so you see is very little speculation is there on philosophy in our movement. But as far as culture goes, it's like unlimited speculation because they don't have religion, right? And then those that do have, generally they take up from sentiment. So either they're following Vedic culture, but it's more sentimental or even fanatic, and they can't give the philosophy behind it, or they follow their own westernized, you know, idea of a Krishnized social system, but it's just sentiment. There is no philosophy to back it up. Is that okay? Yes? What do you think? You agree? Yes? So, do you think, now this is the question, do you think for the very harsh winters in the Andean mountains, you know, that the sweaters that the llama herders put on their llamas, should that be made from merino wool? Or should it be made from Angora wool? Angora without a doubt. And why do you say without a doubt? Because someone may doubt?
I doubt.
He doubts, so therefore you have to give some support for your point.
I'm not sure the reason why.
He has a doubt.
You're presenting the argument, so you have to tell me.
He has a doubt. See, okay, I could mention his doubt. See, the angora made from rabbit hair is very, very soft, and the llamas, they, you know, they're not known to be, they're not rough creatures, you know, they wouldn't be like, let's say, a wild boar or, you know, one of the kids in the Gurukul or something like that. So they're more peaceful animal, right? But at the same time, they're animal, stretching necks, running around, doing things like that. So the tendency is the rabbit wool stretches. So he has a doubt on your decision about rabbit wool.
I would put forward.
You would put forward.
He said angora because he's a wool snob.
A wool snob. Ooh, he says that you're very snobbish, therefore you said angora, of course, because you would never stoop to the level of angora, what do you call
merino.
It? Merino wool, which just so happens to come from Australia. Ah, now he says he doesn't even know what angora was. Okay, but I would have said it was a good decision on one sense, since angora wool supposedly is 9 times more warm than merino wool. Excuse me, regular wool, sheep wool. That's not merino.
I actually just thought merino sounded more high class, so I figured angora would go for a llama.
I see. So you are trying to pick the lower class one for the, you have something against the lamas? They spit on you or something? And therefore you.
What about alpaca?
Ah, now what about alpaca?
The sister, the cousin brother of the lama.
You understand? If you take these llamas and you shave them, and you take that wool, that and make it into stuff, you know, sweaters, they call that alpaca.
No, it's another. It's two different animals.
Two different animals. Yeah. It's just a smaller llama.
Yeah, all bigger llamas. There's llamas, there's alpacas, and there's even another one, which is really small.
Oh, they keep it as a house pet or something.
Not sure.
A chihuahua with a long neck. That would be wild. Okay. So now he's presenting that alpacas, since they're related, they're like cousins, then they would feel more comfortable in that than something else that's coming from a far distant land and is, you know, something that's short, stubby, with a short neck and big horns. While they have very long, majestic neck and everything like that, they might consider it.
They want to get alpaca, but follow me.
But that's what you want, but we ask you for your recommendations. So you're taking the neutral point and making these poor llamas have to make their own decision.
Keep flying alpaca.
Alpaca, okay. But now I have a question. Why you didn't put forward the possibility of Kashmir? It's very warm also.
Alpaca.
Family, okay. So you're keeping within the family, okay. Because you're thinking, why would they want to wear goat wool anyway? But they do move around in mountains, so they are similar in lifestyle. So then you would take it that alpaca would be the first choice, cashmere the second choice. Then you would then, but then the question is would you take angora over merino or merino over angora?
I'm just not sure what merino wool is.
Merino wool is the wool from these sheep in Australia that are very, very fat and fluffy. And they get very long threads so that you can make very fine cloth. Like most wool that you buy that's considered a better quality will always be merino wool. If it's more rough and itchy, then it's not merino wool. That means it's just regular sheep wool, not merino sheep. So what is it? The angora or merino would be first or second?
I think he's brains on.
I see.
I think the right synapses have been connected.
Why, you didn't eat enough cheese in the sabzi yesterday? Or you ate too much so the brain's still not working? I think we got something there. Okay, so then we'll leave it at that. So we'll send your recommendation to the llama herders in the Andean mountains there.
The
International Llama Herders Society, and tell them that Adi gave this recommendation. Okay? He would say in Bengali, Pran Ache Jar Se Hetu Prachar. Quote, a person must have life to be a preacher. A dead man cannot preach. Right? In other words, he's saying, someone who has life, they can preach. So therefore, preaching is going on means somebody's got life. Right? And if no preaching is going on, then there's a lot of people that aren't so alive.
You could also take that even up to you, until you're dead.
Yeah, until you're dead, you can preach, yeah?
Or anybody can preach.
Anybody could preach? What do you think? Yes, we got a yes. Yeah. Okay. Only taken what? A year and a half? But hey.
Coming up 2 years.
Yeah, okay, not bad. Okay, it's pretty good. When some of his preachers who had gone to chant and speak reported that no one had attended their meeting, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta replied, "That doesn't matter. The four walls will hear you. That is sufficient. Don't be disappointed. Go on chanting." Right? So, in other words, his point is you preach. If anybody comes or not, doesn't matter. You know, if you're supposed to give class, no one comes, don't worry about it. You still preach. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Because, you know, if you continue like that, then it will happen. Like that. But don't worry. Don't be disappointed. Then, next one. And in commenting on the fact that some of his disciples had fallen away, he said, "Some of the soldiers will die," he said. You know, it's a battle. So you're having a war with Maya. So sometimes people die. So one is never disappointed or distracted because other people may give up Krishna consciousness. Actually, in his final instructions that he gave before he left, one of the points was, don't be disappointed if others leave Krishna consciousness. Like that. You know, even if everybody else leaves and you're the only one left, you should still, you know, be fixed in Krishna consciousness. Because the point is that going back to Godhead is the perfection of your life. It's not dependent upon anybody else's. Right? Like that. And also he would say, and Prabhupada would say, that if after doing all this preaching, and if the result of it is one person goes back to Godhead, then it will have been worth it. Right? So it's not that so many, even one, that's enough. Yeah? Okay. But he did not want his disciples to lead an easygoing life. He once criticized the disciples being ease-loving. Nor should they attempt to practice austerities in seclusion. He would sing a song of his own composition, Mantumi Kishir Vaishnav. My dear mind, what kind of Vaishnav are you? You are chanting Hare Krishna in a solitary place, imitating the great saints Haridas Thakur and Rupa Goswami. But your meditation is actually to think of women and money. Your mind is filled with such dirty things, so your bhajan is simply cheating. He taught that if a devotee gave up his preaching in the city in favor of solitary meditation, that was a method of cheating by imitating the great saints in hopes of getting cheap adoration from others. Therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta never liked to open a branch of the Gaudiya Math in a place that was not very much populated. Yeah, so, and in this, one may say is that, but, you know, what's the problem in this? You know, chanting in a secluded place. One is that you're performing your bhajan, and not many other people will get any benefit from it. Other people can't take part and associate. The second thing would be that in doing it, unless you're on the level like these great acharyas who are only thinking of Krishna, for them, they don't have to be in a secluded place to have that same absorption. It's just less of a botheration. They'll be that absorbed if you put them in the middle of a city. So it's not that they have to go away to get absorbed. They're already absorbed. So if you have to go away to get absorbed, when you go away, whatever is distracting you goes with you in your own mind. Right? The other thing is that the acharya, he is preaching and saying to preach. And the method to go back to Godhead is to please Krishna, and Krishna is pleased when his devotee is pleased. Therefore, we have to please the spiritual master. So then, if he's asking that you preach, therefore we should be involved in some way that preaches. Right? So secluded means we're just interested in our own bhajan. Doesn't mean we can't be in some out-of-the-way place and preach. But his point is, one should preach like that. Yes? Abhay went on listening to his spiritual master at every opportunity, but rarely did Abhay put a philosophical inquiry before him. He preferred simply to listen. Srila Prabhupada, I never asked my spiritual master a question, except one, how shall I serve you?
the name of this chapter. Oh, it's a long chapter, this one. Okay. So that's the main thing, is how to serve. Because the philosophy made sense, he understood it, yes. What is meant by? Means you have to turn up the volume a little bit. Somehow it's not reaching over here. Or my ears aren't very good. What is
inquiry?
Inquiry means ask the question. Inquire means, a query is a question. So to inquire means the act of asking a query. Okay? I'm sure that cleared everything up for you. You understand question? Like, when's lunch? When is this class going to be over? You know, like that. That's a question. So to ask a question, that's an inquiry. So what you did now is you just inquired about what's an inquiry. Okay? Yes? There you go.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.